Blog Talk Radio.
They call me Mr. Motivator, and that's my stage name. I also perform not only motivational speaking, but I also perform stand-up comedy. And I'm looking at all the classes today, and I want to say to you, there are just one. You see, so many of us have a lot inside of us, but for some.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Mr. Motivator Show. I'm your host, Dwight Jeffrey, reminding you to dare to dream and to keep thinking big. You will discover your purpose in life. We have a great show lined up for you today. Our topic is heads or tails. You make the choice. Now, don't you go anywhere. I want you to put down that piece of chicken and that potato salad because it's time for you to get some inspiration and some motivation. Before we begin the show, we would also like to pay tribute to the late Zig Ziglar. Mr. Zig Ziglar is one of the greatest motivational speakers to ever hit the circuit. Mr. Ziglar influenced a lot of great motivational speakers, and he helped to build a lot of successful corporations around America. And we want to express our condolences to the Zig Ziglar family, and our prayers are with you. But we had to say something before we started the show about Mr. Ziglar because I consider him to be one of the greatest coaches. And I sit in a lot of his workshops and a lot of the training that he offered to individuals that wanted to aspire to achieve goals was just absolutely amazing. And I am so thankful to have the opportunity to listen and to be trained by one of the great, I consider one of the best motivational speakers to ever work in the industry. Ladies and gentlemen, he will be missed, but his work will live on by the millions of lives that he's changed through his motivation and his encouragement. In the game of life, sometimes we have to make choices. Before they start the football game, they always let the players come out and choose heads or tails. That way we know who's going to get the ball, who's going to receive, who's going to kick off. Many times, it depends on who makes the call. Usually, the one who makes the right call and they get the opportunity to have the ball first, it gives them a chance to get ahead of the other team, to get things started before the other team. What about you in life? Do you make the right choices when it comes to choosing heads or tails? What have your calls been like? Have you won a lot of your coin tosses? Because life is like a game. And we have to compete. We have to make the right choices in order to be successful, in order to obtain. We're going to cover you making the call. We want you to make the best call so that you can come out ahead. You get to start off and receive the kickoff. We also would like to thank our special guests who flew into town this morning, and we picked him up at the airport. He's a little bit tired and everything, but we are always excited when this gentleman is in town because he brings the crowd wherever he's performing at. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome our guest to the Mr. Motivator Show, Alexi Rinaldo. Welcome, Alexi.
Hey. Nice to be here. Thanks for welcoming me to the show. I love coming here.
You know, we always love having you to be on our set because you really, not only do you inspire me, you inspire a lot of people because knowing the fact that you came from humble beginnings and to be achieving the milestones that you've been blessed to achieve and to have to be known in a lot of places and to and the contribution that you've made to our society is just phenomenal, and we're happy that you're here with us today. But that's one of the reasons that I asked you to come in and talk to us, because I believe that had you not chosen the right coin, had you not made the call for your life, you would not be in a position that you're in today. When they asked you, hey, did you choose heads or tails? Obviously, you chose heads because you wanted to be at the helm of everything. Alexia, tell us about yourself. Maybe take us back to at a time where you were small and a time that you started early in life visualizing, or you saw that there were some things developing in you, and it made you appear to be maybe somewhat different from some of the other students, but you know that you had something special. And I tell you, it's going to be hard to get out of the studio to get to the parking lot because, as usual, whenever you come, the ladies, they're just all over the place. What is it they love about you? I mean, I thought we had our show would be great if we could get Mario Lopez here, but the kind of responses that you're getting, I don't think you're going to be nowhere close to all the comments and fans that follow you around the place. But tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got to where you are.
Well, I mean, if you start looking at my childhood and trajectory, I think that's kind of like my theory is that anybody's a ball of clay. And it's everyone's material is a little bit different, you know. Some balls of clay, you know, are, you know, there's a maroon color, there's a greenish color, there's a bluish color, there's a reddish color, there's a pinkish color. You know what I mean? There's just different things. Like, but it's up to everybody to really kind of start molding themselves, you know. And this week I read it's life isn't about discovering who you are. It's about creating who you are. And that's really what I've done, because, you know, as you know, I could have easily ended up selling shoes at Foot Locker. You know, I was sold shoes, you know, when I was in high school, you know, and I could have ended up, you know, there. And it's only by sometimes negative turn into positives, and the setbacks really drive you. A lot of times, there's been times when the one-man show, which I'm working on right now, which I'm in the process of getting some investors for this show, but that show would never have been written if probably I walked out of this audition not being cast for this TV show. And there were, and that really, you know, to really have a setback like that, it really begins to drive you because it makes you want it more. And to have a setback, it makes you really, you'll never know unless you ever, if you don't fail, I mean, you really, I don't know that you can succeed. There's something that happens when you fail that it's really somewhere in the heart. It's almost like a breakup, like a heartbreak, right?
Yeah.
Whenever you fail, it's a little bit like a heartbreak, especially in the arts. Whenever you know, you've really put yourself, you've written something or you created something, some musical piece, you sang, you really went out there and put yourself on the line. And if you know, somebody says, oh, we didn't like it or it was rejected somehow, which is, you know, the arts sometimes ends up being a business. That right there, you know, in the arts, it takes so much for yourself to be completely focused and put your heart into it, that if it's ever declined or rejected, it breaks your heart. And that makes you want to go forward. Some people, if it sets you back, then you're never going to create the person the version of your full potential. You're never going to make your ball of clay into a Michelangelo's piece of art.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really the choices, I think, that you make after the failure are, I think, the important ones. There's the first choice that you're going to make, that you're going to do it regardless, but then there's going to be failure, and then it's up to you to really to keep going and keep looking at. You have to visualize exactly what it is that this ball of clay is going to be, because whenever I got rejected for that show, I thought there was a choice. You can either give up and keep selling shoes and tell your friends, oh, I didn't make it, and that's it, or you have to keep visualizing moving forward.
Wow. Now, for those of you who just tuned in to the Mr. Motivated Show, our topic today is heads and tails. You make the choice. And we're talking about your life. We're talking about your career, the choices that are right for you. And our guest today is Alexi Rinaldo, stand-up comedian, motivational speaker, actor and playwright. He's given us his insight. He's allowed us to look at his career and how it has transpired and the challenges that he faced before he was able to get in that arena. And I met Alexi during the time that he and I both, at one time, were working together as educators, and we met up, believe it or not, we met up at the same theater, the same comedy club. He and I both were performing at the same comedy club, and we found out that we had a lot in common. I didn't know he was an educator. He didn't know I was an educator. But guess what? We both were going to the same place to do stand-up comedy. And for those of you, if you ever want to really catch a great show, if you want to laugh, I tell you what, don't put no chicken, don't put anything in your mouth when you get in front of Alexi, because we don't want you to get choked from laughing so hard. He is a great comedian and a motivational speaker. And anyway, those of you who just tuned in, we want to welcome you to the broadcast. And we want you to stay with us and listen to this show, because you will need to make a decision. Some of you right now are in a place where you're facing decisions that must be made. And you're wondering, will I make the right choice? Stay with us. Don't go anyplace. Because we want you to listen to the broadcast And we want to inspire you to make the choice that's right for you. Thank you for sharing that with us, Alexi, that the challenge you had while being working as a shoe salesman, doing all this while you were in school, and knowing that this is what I've got to get on stage. It's in me. It's in my blood. Do I step out and take a chance on myself, or do I play it safe and just push it out the back of my head and stay with selling shoes? But Alexi made the choice, and he is with us today. He's one of the hottest comics here in Dallas and among other places, other cities that he's been traveling to. And I think he loves New York because he's been doing quite a few things in New York lately, but we're not going to expose all of his projects that he's working on. We know that I got word that you have some more great plays and a movie that's up in the making. But we don't want to get ahead of you. But right now, I'd like you to take us back to where you left out in high school. And then when you left high school and when it was time for you to enter in college, did this thing seem to keep crossing in front of you? Could you feel it there in the classroom? Could you feel that this gift, this talent is pulling me, is drawing me in certain areas? And how did your friends react to you? Because I know you gave them free comedy and you clowned for them in the dorms and everything. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I think after high school, I mean, during high school, my artistic experience was really in choir, you know, and what I did is actually, like, I studied a lot of Michael Jackson and even, like, all these boy bands, like, NSYNC, like, doing all the moves and singing and all this. And I think after high school, my dream was really, I wanted to be a rock star, you know.
Yeah.
And I was listening to a lot of Lenny Kravitz and the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yeah.
And that's what I wanted to be. So it wasn't, you know, it was whenever I started going to college and started taking acting classes, that's whenever that triggered that button that, whoa, man, this thing is fun. You know, and I was actually a government major, and I had a philosophy. I have a degree in government and philosophy, and this one-man show, which I've been writing, it deals with there's a lot of government critique found within the show. The same way, you know, it's different than someone like Chris Rock would do or George Carlin did. It's what I do. You know, but at the same time, it's like I used my, it's a weird way to use a government degree to, we're going to write comedy shows or to write, you know, use my philosophy degree for, you know, oh, we're going to get a little bit philosophical with comedy too. So it's, you know, because there's not a job, you know, whenever you think that a political scientist is going to go ahead and they're going to write books. You know, they're going to write books and they're going to become professors. You never think a political scientist is going to become, you know, a performing artist. You know, it's not. It's just, what I love to do is perform. And the intellectual part of me is wired to think about things maybe at the social institutions, and then kind of critique them. You know, it's a lot of things in our society are ridiculous. You know, you start opening up the newspaper, it's how can you not write a comedy show? So, anyway, it's been an evolution process.
Wow, thank you for sharing it, Alexi. The degree in government and philosophy, that's very impressive. I didn't know that's what your background was in. But isn't it amazing? And for you that are listening, if you're a youth or if you're a parent and you have teenagers at home that you're getting ready for college, let them know education is very valuable, and it plays a role in your success, whether you realize it or not. And you use that as listening. If you want to be a successful rapper, rock star, an education can help you. Knowledge always gives us insight. It gives us an understanding on what to do with our craft. Now, here's a stand-up comedian who's using his knowledge in government and politics, and he's entertaining people and making money. How creative. And I hope this will inspire those of you that are listening today. No education is a waste of time. An education is an investment. And whether you have the job or not that you thought you would get, an education can help you or aid you in any aspect of your life, whether in the early stages or in the latter stages when you get older. And I really enjoy Alexis saying that, just letting you all know a little bit about him and why he's so successful in the entertainment industry. Now, I heard this from one of our staff members. They were listening to you back in the green room. You were talking to some of the other guests. And is that true, Alexi, that the kids in grade school, they started talking about your mama, and by the time you got through talking about their mama, some of them were crying and saying they didn't have a mama?
Yeah, that's how the legend started.
Well, hey, we all start someplace, and he didn't start it, right? He used it to defend himself, so he was ready for the student, the ones that want to come by and get that started, and we all have had to defend ourselves when someone starts coming at us with your mama jokes. But he knew that when he got into college, he knew where he was headed, even though he loved government and philosophy. From my understanding, one of your friends mentioned that you always had them laughing in class, and it was hard. They got in trouble when they come in class with you because you were doing your comedy and you were cracking on the professor. And just to look at you, Alexi, you look like just a great guy who's quiet, and no one just looked at you could believe you're the kind of guy that would have everybody falling over laughing and just cracking up with your comedy. So how do you create comedy? Do you look at funny things, or do you look at things that aren't funny and you put a funny spin on them?
I think I look at things that are very awkwardly funny and then put a spin on them. Like, I was watching yesterday Peter Schiff, which is the president of Europac. He's someone who I'm going to try to contact about investing in a show. But I was watching him interview some people on Occupy Wall Street, and there's just some weird people that he was running across.
Yeah.
And there was this guy, and he says, you know, he's kind of a little guy, but he said, you have to understand something, Peter. The popularity meme, the 1% meme, was just one meme of many memes. And Peter says, what's a meme? And this guy sort of shakes his head and says, well, you see, here we are standing, and that meme stands for popularity. And that's just one meme. And we're here at Liberty Park. And that symbolizes. And then I kept going on and on, and it never really made a sentence.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that was funny. And I would just rewind. So right now, I'm in the process of memorizing what this guy said, because he just went on and on and on and on and on and on, and there was never a sentence. And I just have like a weird sense of humor where it's, I don't know, the weird things are funny to me. And I think people see that what that they're, I think people see that they are funny. But, you know, it's really, it's hard to explain what it is that I do, because it's like Richard Pryor with, he's something else, and Chris Rock is something else. And you know, me, I'm kind of more subtle with my style and not, I don't know, it's just a little different, a little bit more passive, but I think it's a creative approach to it. I'm wired that way as a comedian.
Well, thank you for sharing it with Alexi, because I know that comedians, they're attracted to different things, and they create their humor and their comedy, and they use their environment. And I appreciate you sharing it with us, because I look at situations and I create my own form of humor based on situations that I experience. And I know that by the time you get through, finished with Mr. Mean, he's going to be a popular character. Now, also, you didn't tell me this, but I heard through the grapevine that you're also writing a joke book now. Want to share a little bit of stuff about that, or is that one of the projects you don't want to really discuss on anything with right now?
Right now, it's the initial stages, because actually there's, you know, it really takes a while to collect a body of work, and I'm happy with how this book is going. It's not ready to really release, you know, what it is that the joke book is, you know.
Now, I'm not going to put you out there, but you know, I know you in the sense that I know how you you make me laugh, and you're just a naturally funny guy, and we don't want to put any names out there, but I've seen you do some imitations of some of the professors and some of the people that we work with, and you not only can you sound like them, you can make your body language repeat what they do, and it's so hilarious. I mean, it's hard for me to stop laughing. You're this guy that stands up there, and you're passing the paper, and you're watching this awkward, goofy person, and all of a sudden you end up imitating that person, and you look and sound and act. It's incredible. Now, I want to ask you, some people can listen to people and they pick up the way that they talk or their accent, and they can. Now, do you listen to a person and the first time you hear them, you can immediately mimic that person, or do you get a DVD, or you watch them a couple of times and then you can pick up on their voices? How does it work for you?
Some people have this voices that you just, that are easily imitable. You can very easily just pick it up and by ear, and so other voices, like for example, you know, my George Bush impression is it goes, you know, that's how he laughs. Like he goes, hey. That's my George Bush impression, you know. You know, it's really weird. And then there's, you know, someone like Barack Obama, I could never hear that voice. It's not until I heard somebody else do the voice. Sometimes you can only do an impression of an impression, not to somebody, you hear somebody else do the impression that you start doing an impression of their voice, because you can hear it better from them than, you know, Barack himself. I had a hard time, where is that voice? Someone like Clint Eastwood, you know, it's like, Clint, hey, Bob, make my day. You know, I mean, that grouch, you know, There's that, and there's some voices you can easily pick them up. Some of them I need an impression of an impression.
Wow. I tell you, I wish everyone could see your facial expressions when you do these people. To me, sometimes it's the body language and the facial expressions can project even stronger than the voices. And I think it works a little bit like that with me. I can imitate some people, but it's not so much that I sound like those people, but it's the faces that I make. People say they like my facial expressions, and I've had a lot of folks come up to me during the comedy club, and they go, "Hey, I love your face expression." So it I always get a kick out of, you know, putting on my cowboy hat, and I walk up to some of the folks sitting out in the club, and, "Hello there, Pilgrim. What's your name, would you? I'll pick up that horse and head on up to the corral." And then I wink my eye at them, and then they're laughing. So I know it's the facial expressions, because my voice may not sound a lot of time exactly like the person that I'm imitating, but the facial expression, it gets them every time. Now, what about when you're working with directors? Now, I know you've been involved with directors and some of the people that help produce the movies, produce the plays. Are they all always real serious, or are there a few, Alexi, that you've loosened up and you did a few crazy things and they started laughing at? Could you share one or two of those experiences with us?
Yeah, I mean, it's just everyone is a different artist, including the directors. You know, the comedians are different artists, and they take different approaches. And, you know, like me and you would probably have a whole different comedic philosophy. What works for you wouldn't work for me. And then for directors, it's a lot the same. There's some directors that are really anal about every little thing. And there's some of them that are a little more relaxed in going to let the actor sort of have some artistic, a little bit of more autonomy over the artistic approach, the creative approach, the philosophy of his character. And so some directors have it directly in their mind that this character is this, must be played like that. And it's almost like some directors want you to play the character. It's this way. It's this character has, and I need it to look like this. And they have that in their mind. They want you as an actor to play it that way. And other directors, they are a little more willing to explore who the character is. So I think there's two different styles of directors, and you know there's probably even more, it's a gradient, it's a scale. So I mean, directors, some of them you love work with them, and some of them you really love to work with them.
Well, Alexi, I know that you're not a ladies' man, but every time you come here to the studio, a lot of the single women that work here, they're saying they love for you to be their man. Now, if you're going to get involved and you want to play a dramatic scene and maybe have a scene that not only is dramatic, a little bit of action, and there's some romance, what leading lady would you think help you to shine, or you think you would feel comfortable with doing a scene with? Give us a couple.
You put me on the spot here. I like funny women, you know, and I've looked at someone. I've been watching The Office a lot lately, and
the character played by, her name is, well, actually, now that I think about it, Jennifer Aniston has always been, she always seems like a funny, she always seems funny, like she would be fun to work with. And, you know, and going back on the Office, you know, I've been watching it, and the character mm-hmm. that plays Jan Levinson,
yeah.
where she's just very intimidating in the presence, and yet she's beautiful.
Yeah.
And just sometimes just for the experience of the dynamic of what's going to happen within a scene whenever you have, I mean, Jennifer Aniston, and her name is Melora Harding. That's
yeah.
who plays Jan in The Office. Melora Harding. There's two different women, and you have them play the same character, and you're going to have two completely different scenes based on just who the artist is. So those seem like, I'd like to try a scene. I don't know. But they seem interesting to me.
I think you made some great choices. And would you be comfortable with the romantic scene where you're actually kissing, or would you just want something just with the action and everything? Or what would work best for you?
Well, I never really thought about it like that. I mean, the way I think about it is, you know, I'm an actor. An actor is an actor. Whenever I take on the role, I mean, I think we all kind of have that within us. Performing is there isn't a thing to me, I don't think, that you know, I should feel awkward doing a romantic scene, because, you know, performing, I think, as a performer, as an actor, you are responsible, I think, for bringing down the mask. You know, in this world, we put up a mask, we put up barriers.
Yeah.
As a performer, in order to do that job well, you really have to take these masks down, and that includes the mask of you know, you got hesitancy about intimacy.
Yeah.
You know, if you have that, you know, if you have, you are wearing that mask out in the world, then when you go to do that in the theater, that is the time to take that mask off. You know, it's really hard. You know, it's harder for people to, you know, they build up these masks with relationships, with maybe the way that they're going to behave at their job. I don't know. They're going to try to look like the good employee. Meanwhile, they're alcoholics after work. You know, it's. You know, they're putting on a mask.
Yeah.
They're hiding who they are.
Right.
That's the interesting thing about performing, I think, is taking off the mask. So the action scenes, man, the action scenes, I love the challenge of it, of an action scene. And then a romantic scene is, I mean, it's just part of the game, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, but it's all. I mean, it's. I love doing it all. You know, love doing it.
Oh, great! Thank you for sharing it with us, Alexi. You really know how to really help us to visualize the characters and everything. And is there a particular? I'm talking about, of course, a favorite action actor who gets your attention. I'm a couple of years older than you, so I grew up, you know, Clint Eastwood was always one of my favorite. And not only Clint Eastwood, there's so many, Denzel Washington, and there's another guy, this guy's awesome. And he just, when he plays the characters, the characters are so real. And I've always been a Samuel L. Jackson fan. He plays the character so well, and he's just a phenomenal actor. Well, can you give us some of the the male actors that you like, whether they're comedy or action, but give us a couple.
First, I think Dave Chappelle. I want to say Dave Chappelle. He's not an action star, but
yeah.
I mean, as an actor, like watching the Chappelle Show. I watch the Chappelle Show about once a week, like a couple of episodes once a week.
Yeah.
I have him on DVD, and just, you know, the way that he was playing these characters. I mean, these characters were great. I mean, there's. And the timing of his improv, you know, just so. I mean, those aren't action stars, but you know, I mean, he's there's also, you know, Johnny Depp. You know, Johnny Depp. He was doing the Sweeney Todd. He was doing Sweeney Todd a few years ago. He performed as Sweeney Todd, and he even sang for that. And some of what I've written in this one man show is actually I have a young composer that's writing me a song for this show because, you know, I'm singing a musical piece in this show. And, you know, that's why, you know, this is my one-man show style. And it's not the usual stand-up. It's the one-man show. I got a song in there, and then I asked the composer to write it in a Sweeney Todd style, you know, because we're going to make it dark. But we're gonna need to fit in the context of the show. That way, it's still funny. It's gonna be funny.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and that's not an action star. But I just, you know, there's Jean-Claude Van Damme, who just, you know, one thing I've always wondered. I wonder this: is how is it that can anyone really, you know, beat up 40 guys at one time? I mean, like, come on, right?
Yeah.
I always wonder that. Like, how do they make this? Because, you know, you watch UFC. If you watch UFC, you see two guys, and there's, it always looks like there's a little bit of a struggle going on. There's a little bit of a struggle. So I would think, and a fight, or if you ever looked at a fight doesn't look that clean, like in a movie.
Yeah.
In a movie, someone's punch looks very precise. And even the counter to that looks clean itself, like there's a clean block, you know, and then it goes right into a different movement. And he does a kick, and then that guy falls into another guy, and then he grabs the other guy, and he throws him into this other guy, and I don't know, I always wonder that.
Hey, you made it a kind of an interesting scenario there. Now, what'd you think about the Chris Tucker doing a Michael Jackson move, and then he does his kick? Chris Tucker and Jackie Chan. Those two guys, I laugh so every time they do a movie together because it is so hilarious and so funny. But even though you gave a listener, and Dave Chappelle, he's one of the all-time greats as far as a comedian, a comedy man, a guy that could just write it. And he did such a great job of giving you a true scenario of how something really is, and then he turns it into humor. It's very incredible. And we would love in the future time to get Dave Chappelle to have him here on the Mr. Motivator Show. Because I would love to talk to him and really get into his head and find out some things about his phenomenal comedy, his phenomenal talent and everything. But you brought back another question, and I know playwriting is what you do, and you do it so well. And I would like for you to maybe tell us a little bit about your next play, the play that you're working on, but don't give us all the details because I know you don't want to release anything until it's finished. But there may be some people listening that think, hey, I can do it in a couple of seconds. It's easy. Could you give us a little bit of insight as to what all goes into putting together a successful play and writing your material in? How you create these things and what what is required, and give us a little bit of insight about all this.
I think first, for me, the show is, you know, because a lot of times people, okay, this show that I'm writing right now, which is I'm almost finished with the show. It's taken about 3 years possibly to finish the show. It's 3 years. So the whole idea that you're going to write a one-man show in a month, to me, is very foreign. I know that there's some people out there that do it, that they, you know, that they can do it. To me, I can't, you know, I'm not sure, can't isn't the right word for it, but it's just that I'm very specific, almost a perfectionist to the point that I really want a show to work on different levels, and that's part of the reason why it does take a while in my creative process, I've found, because there's, if you look at any Shakespeare play or any good piece of writing, you start noticing that there's different themes playing out within a show. There's in The Tempest, written by Shakespeare, you know, some people are talking about, what was that show about? Some people say that show was a political show. Some people think that show was about slavery. Some people think that show was about the end of Shakespeare's career at the Globe Theater. So there's different interpretations. I think any good piece of writing is working on different levels like that. So with my one-man show, I've really, taking Shakespeare courses and reading Shakespeare has really benefited the approach that I take to writing a play. Because, yeah, I am writing a one-man show, and yeah, we do have to make people laugh. But for me, the important thing is to really write a story that's well written and it's beautiful and it's whole, because that's, you know, part of the reason why it takes a while, because you are more aware of, you're more aware of what you're dealing with, of the subject matter, than you know, maybe if you're going to write the usual stand-up, you know, which is going to, you know, maybe, you know, even those shows can take a while. For example, Chris Rock's show, Bigger and Blacker, took him a year and a half to 2 years to write that show. So, I think any good piece of art, you never know when lightning's going to strike. Who knows, my next show I might take, you know, a few weeks on. But this one-man show took about 2 to 3 years, and it's just the way that this one went. You know, each baby is different, you know, and that's really what you have to treat it like. And it's really a beautiful, beautiful process, though, to be able to really understand what it is that you're writing. And Mozart and Beethoven, even they took a while on some of their musical pieces, their requiems and concerts. So the important thing is to really start, though. You know, it's one thing to say, well, this is going to take, oh man, I can knock that out in a weekend if I just try it. Once you start getting in there, you start noticing what you're dealing with. And once you start noticing what you're dealing with, you start getting an idea of how much time, energy is going to probably take for this. Some of them you can get done pretty relatively quickly, but that's just because that's the personality of that piece. Each piece has a different personality, really. So, and each one is going to take a different amount of time. And that's just, but you have, the important thing is to really start and keep going and keep working on it.
Wow, thank you for sharing that with us, Alexi. I didn't know that so much actually went into doing all that just to get your play fully developed and everything. I tell you, you're just a phenomenal guy, and we're just so elated and blessed to have a star like you to fly in from the Big Apple and to do a show with us and everything. I know you're only going to be here in Dallas for a few days before you head back out to the Big Apple and a few other places that you've been scheduled for, but I would like for Alexi Ronaldo and Mr. Motivator to get together and to do a show. And because it's been a while since you and I have gotten together, and I would like to do something with you. So when you you get some more some free time, you get a break away from your next project, could you fly back into Dallas, or I'll meet with you in New York, and we get together and plan something? Can we do that?
Yeah. That's something we should work out. Whenever that door opens. Whenever my door opens for that, your door opens for that, and that's the way that works, you know.
Thank you. I would be honored to get on stage with you because I've never met a guy like you with so many talents and abilities, skills to do such phenomenal things. And man, I'm looking forward to it, and I can't hardly wait. Another thing I'd like to mention, those of you that have just tuned in with us here on the Mr. Motivate Show, our show today is Head to Tails, You Make the Call. And we're talking about you make the call. When you make the call, if you choose Head to Tails, whatever you receive, whatever you get, you got to stick with it. And Alexi made the call, and he decided that entertainment was where he wanted to be, and he stayed with it, and now he's very successful, and we're happy to have him here on the Mr. Motivated Show, sharing a lot of his talents and sharing his insight with us. Now, before we forget, I'd like to give out Alexis' information to our audience. Okay, I want to make sure that we give out the correct information. Now, those of you who would like to get a hold of Alexi and you'd like to talk to him, you'd like to become a fan or find out more about him, you can email him at thealexishowlive@live.com. That's thealexishow at live, live.com. And also, you can follow Alexis on Twitter, and that is at the chosen one, Alexi. That's the chosen, the number one, Alexi. And you can follow him on Twitter. And we're just always excited to keep up with this young man, to follow him, because his career has certainly blossomed over the years, and there are people now in line waiting to get him in their city. And Dallas is so fortunate to have talent like Alexi Ronaldo. Ronaldo, he is just awesome. Awesome guy, and a friend. So if you have any questions about comedy, theater, motivation, acting, make the call. Decide if this is what you want to do, and if it's what you want to do, stay with it. Don't give up. Do as Alexi did. Perfect your craft. And when you strive to be the best, the rewards are tremendous and they're phenomenal. And to see him here with us, and to be a success, and to have people him and doing everything to try to get a hold of him, it's just amazing. But is there anything else that you'd like to add with some of the comments that you've shared with us? Because I think you mentioned when we were in the dressing room that you are big on setting goals. And could you share us a little bit with that, how that plays a part if a person decides to make that call, and this is where I'm going to stay?
Setting goals is, without setting goals, I think you're going to be easily swayed by life. You have to set goals. Yesterday I've been back and forth with writing a few venture capitalists, you know, to help fund this show, get it off the ground, get it started, get some of the marketing for this to reach the audience. So he sent me a really interesting email. This guy said that, you know, there's this man, West, this other man said, how do you become successful? And this man, you know, this older man, he raised up his finger and he said, this finger. He raises up his finger and the man says, what, your finger? And he says, no, one thing. Focus on one thing. And pretty soon, you're going to be successful. That's one thing. For me, that one thing is this show. That is what is my one thing right now. And so really, it's really, there's, to really define what it is that your goal is powerful. Because that is what I want to accomplish, this show. You know, there's different ideals, like I want to be the greatest superstar in the world. I want to be the greatest football player or actor in the world. And those are different ideals, but, you know, even that can kind of sort of lead you astray. I mean, what does that mean? You know, it's not till you put it on sort of, you define the goal where I'm going to get this part. I'm going to land an agent. For me, it's I'm going to do this show. And that makes it more, I think, accessible. You know, it breaks it down. Smaller goals, and then that builds the overall picture.
Wow, that is so beautiful. I guess we all need to keep that in mind, that we have to set goals once we make our decisions, right? Mm-hmm. And Peter, excuse me, this was an article I found written by Michael Porter, and he said, strategy is about making choices, trade-offs. It's about deliberately choosing to be different. And that was stated by Michael Porter in the Harvard Business Review. And I thought that was so fascinating, because what he was saying, once you make that call, you got to stay with it. And choice is automatically going to make you be different. And folks, you must set a goal. You must have a strategy, just as Alexei explained it to us. And he did such a great job. He made it so simple for us to understand. You must make the choice, then you must set a goal. And once you set a goal, then you create a strategy, create a plan that will help you on target. Well, folks, it looks like we're out of time. And I just want to thank all of you. I want to thank all of my wonderful audience all around the world for just tuning in to with me here on the Mr. Motivator Show today. Again, folks, this is Mr. Motivator reminding you, dare to dream and keep thinking big. You will discover your purpose in life. Also, remember to check out my blog, dwightjeffrey.blogspot.com, and find out where I'm performing and what's going on with the Mr. Motivator Show. And also, you can follow me on Twitter, and that is at C Mr. Motivator. The letter C as in Kyle, M-R-M-O-T-I-V-A-T-O-R. Okay?
Again, we love you. Tune in again next week, the same time, for another exciting show. Thank you.